excited today. It's one of those days where you feel like, boy, today's a good one. And it's because we're interviewing a pretty exciting band. For me personally, I've been a fan of these guys for a while. If you've been into the punk rock scene for a while, you've probably heard of them at some point. And it's a good time for us. We're excited to have Steve from Punchline on the podcast today. Steve, hello, my friend.
Hey, how's it going? Good to talk to you, Brandon.
It's going great. It's a true joy to talk to you on this, Wednesday? On a Wednesday.
Yeah. Okay. My first question for you is this. Mm-hmm. How did you first hear of Punchline?
Gosh, it's been a while. The truth of the matter is I heard about you guys a while ago and didn't so much forget as I did just mm-hmm. not really keep up. And then I got an email from somebody, your PR guy or something, with your new song that you just put out. And I was like, oh, man, let me give this the old go ahead. And I was like, yeah, that's what I wanted. That's exactly what I wanted right now in my life. And so it was good. And then I started to listen back through your discography, which is a good number. And I was like, man, there's something special about punk rock music. It just gets you going.
For sure.
So thank you for asking me a question. I guess if you want to keep going with that, we can, or we can make it about you. Whatever you decide.
Question two.
Okay, good.
Where are you?
I'm in Greenville, South Carolina. That's where I am.
Greenville. Cool.
Yep. Have you ever been there?
Yeah, I'm sure that we've been there, and I want to say that we've probably played there too. Probably Maybe. Not in a really long time, but we used to play pretty much anywhere and everywhere.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised. I know we played Spartanburg.
Yeah, that's close enough.
All right.
Did you play at, gosh, there's like a real crap hole in Spartanburg. I mean, Spartanburg's kind of a crap hole to begin with, but there's one place that I feel like.
Wherever we played, I know, I don't remember what it was called, but I remember hearing that it had closed.
Okay.
But we played there with Bayside.
Okay.
A very long time ago, and it was right after Jack joined Bayside.
Uh-huh.
And that was the night that we like really hit it off.
Nice.
With Jack from Bayside. He rode in our van to the next show and we became really good friends. And I just moved back to Pittsburgh from Nashville. I'm from okay. Pittsburgh. I grew up here, but then I moved to Nashville for a couple years.
Okay.
And Jack and Anthony from Bayside live in Nashville, and we were all good buds and we used to hang out regularly, and now I miss that privilege.
Yeah, why'd you leave Nashville for Pittsburgh?
Nashville is a wonderful place, and I loved my time there.
Good chicken.
The chicken is good, but yeah. Pittsburgh, something about the city is, I don't know. I tell people Pittsburgh has got all the charm.
Yeah. I've never been.
It's great. You should visit. It's a beautiful okay. city. I think it's a very underrated city.
I'm on my way. Let's get going. Let's talk about your band for a little bit.
All right.
Take us back, shall you, to all the way to high school. If I know correctly, which I'm not sure if I do, it's the internet, but you guys started in high school in 98, and I was in some bands in high school, and they all sucked, and they crashed and burned, and but you guys, you're still around in 2017, so talk about starting in high school and why your band defied the odds of gravity and are still around today.
Yeah, that's the thing, is most other bands would have changed their name because yep. we have, you know, this is the band, this is the first real band I was ever in.
Yeah.
I was in another band and we played like one show, but this band, you know, I was still learning to play guitar
uh-huh.
and bought a four track and made a demo tape. So I'll give you the accelerated history.
Okay. Well, hey, just keep in mind, I don't know if you've listened to our podcast before, but we kind of walk through the entire history. So.
Oh, I see. I see.
No, listen, I'm not offended that you haven't listened to our podcast.
Well, I'm glad that you're not offended because honestly, I haven't listened to your podcast, but I would love to check it out.
That's okay. So just for this moment in time, talk about high school and how you kind of got started and punchline sure became a thing.
Yeah. So Chris Fafalius, who's our bass player, we rode the same bus,
yeah,
but we weren't friends. And I used to see him sitting up front wearing an Operation Ivy t-shirt, always listening to music.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard that he played bass and I played guitar, and one of his buddies asked me to come to their band practice, and I went to their band practice, and I didn't know a lot about playing, but they really didn't know anything. So I remember I was like, wow, like I'm like the know-it-all,
yeah,
here, like, but I really didn't know anything either. But we worked out a couple songs, and then that didn't go anywhere. And then our buddy PJ played drums, and we asked him if we could get together and play. So the three of us got together and played. And I think within like a week or so, we came up with the name Punchline, which was just like a name that I had written in notebooks as if I already had the band.
Right.
And I just kind of liked that name, and they liked it, so we went with that, and we made some demo tapes,
yeah,
and we played some shows a couple months into having our band, and it was cool. It was very inspiring because our friends were really supportive, but I think because we were like the only band in the high school.
Uh-huh.
We had fun. We played some shows, and then I was a sophomore in high school.
Okay.
And so that was pretty much my high school. We made one album, one CD while I was in high school called How to Get Kicked Out of the Mall, which was, I think, like 12 or 13 songs.
Yeah. How'd you guys record that? Because I know nowadays it's anybody can do anything because of their laptops.
Yeah, we
and
went
stuff.
To a record, like a local recording studio. And the guy was just kind of like a button pusher. He didn't really care whole lot. I mean, he was a nice guy. Kind of feel like it cost a lot, and kind of feel like he could have cared a lot more. But what are you gonna do?
Right. What can you do? So looking, I tried to find those albums and I couldn't find them anywhere. Are they as bad? Are they as bad as you would assume that they are?
I mean, there's songs here and there. I mean, I feel like musically and melody wise, I can listen to stuff from back then and be like, wow, I feel like we had a knack for songwriting right off the bat. But
yeah,
lyrically and like sound quality, that's where I tend to.
But,
shudder.
But even if the fact that you can say that means that you are a far superior musician than I am, because I look back at stuff that I made and I'm like, that was not good in any like world of music.
I mean, we definitely have a bunch of songs that fall into that category.
I think everyone does. Speeding forward a little bit to 2003 when you guys got signed to Fueled by Ramen, like obviously now people know them. They're well known. They got 21 Pilots, Paramore, and stuff like that. But in 2003, they were still relatively new. They'd been around for a little bit. But talk about getting signed by them, but also being signed to a label that's kind of early on in its life.
For sure. So after high school, we went to college, but we were just obsessed with playing. We started playing, out of state regionally, and then did our first tour, like a summer tour. And as soon as we started doing the touring, we were seeing other bands and like seeing some bands that would pull up to shows and have like a real nice van and trailer. And we're like, wow, what are they doing? They were not doing. We're like, oh, they're on a record label. Like, that's what we got to do. And we like sent out some press kits and tried to contact labels, got some rejection letters. And then I remember one day we just were real frustrated. And we were like, you know what? We're not going to send out anything. We're going to wait until we're going to work hard and do our thing until they come to us. Mm-hmm. And that's how we'll know that we're doing it right, And that actually worked.
Nice.
Which is amazing. But Fuel by Ramen came out to see us play. A couple of the guys, we were in Gainesville, Florida. And I remember we played that show. And, you know, and the span, every show is important that you play. But, you know, there's definitely shows where you're like, hey, we really got to play well tonight. And I remember after that show feeling like, wow, we could not have played any better, you know, for us.
Yeah.
So that was exciting. And they, the owner of the label, John Janik, who's now the CEO of Interscope Records, which is just insane. He called me a couple days later and was like, hey, you know, we, really like your band and we want to put out a couple of your records. And he sent us a contract and we, pretty much blindly signed it. Ended up being like a great deal. Anyways, it was like the era before what signing a record deal meant. You like signed away a big part of your likeness as well. And this wasn't the case. So yeah, we signed to Fuel by Ramen and that we signed at the same time as Fall Out Boy, which okay. we already knew Fall Out. We were already like playing shows with Fall Out Boy.
Mm-hmm.
But Fuel by Ramen was a very small office in Gainesville, Florida. There were only four people and an intern that worked there.
Wow.
And within 2 years, Fall Out Boy, you know, broke
right.
And things went so crazy. It was so crazy to see like the label go from such a small thing. I always tell people that like seeing that firsthand, it makes you, it's like seeing something have the ability to go from being this tiny small thing to, you know, in the span of a couple years become a household name.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just makes me like really hopeful seeing anybody do anything that like there are those stories. So being on Fuel by Ramen was super helpful to us because then we started getting bigger tours. I think we went on tour with Les and Jake, but before signing Fuel by Ramen and touring with them, Les and Jake was the band that I had paid to see the most. I had like gone to see them like 20 times and then we got to go on tour with them. So that was super incredible. And I definitely give Vinny from Less Than Jake credit for being, I feel like he was a really eye-opening and mind-expanding fellow to hang out with who kind of, I feel like I used to look at the whole music world as more of, from more of like a band dude perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he empowered me to look at it from more of an artistic perspective, which I'm very grateful for, having picked that up from him.
Yeah.
So yeah, we put out the Rewind EP, which was an EP that we had already released, but we re-released it. And then we went to Chicago and we made our album Action with mm-hmm. producer Sean O'Keefe, which we actually just reconnected with him this last month here. He mixed a new song that we just put out. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
We sure will. So, now you're getting it.
Yeah. So we released Action, and by that point we were touring a lot. We were playing, I don't know, 100 to 200 shows a year and had been.
Was that because
you
wanted to or because it was part of the contract?
No, that was our our method when we said let's wait for labels to come to us. We're like, well, we'll just tour and tour and tour. And which was great because it was kind of like before everyone and your brother was in a band. So
right.
It was like, I don't know. I feel like it was a good time to do it.
Yeah.
So Action came out and we were, had been touring a bunch and we're all stressed out, had some inner band turmoil. We lost a guitar player
mm-hmm.
and kind of, didn't really take any breaks, picked up another guitar player, went back to the studio to make 37 Everywhere.
Hey, you've got me.
which we recorded that with these producers in New York who Bayside had recorded with. We were just good friends with Bayside. I went to visit them when they were in the studio making, what is that album called? Oh, their self-titled album. Mm-hmm. And we really liked those producers, so we did our album with them. And that was cool because that was like, I think when we made Action, it was something like we wrote 13 songs and recorded 12.
Uh-huh.
And but then we got real into songwriting. So by the time we did 37 Everywhere, we had written like 40 songs and picked 10.
Yeah.
And it was really exciting as far as like the songwriting side of it. So 37 Everywhere came out, and that was 2006, and we we toured with Real Big Fish and Bowling for Soup and Fall Out Boy, and that was probably like, that was a great year for
touring. Yeah, I'm fairly certain that's when I heard of you with 37 Everywhere.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's dark down there, you need a flashlight. That was also around the time when, like, downloading music was becoming a much bigger thing.
Yeah.
And after we did 37 Everywhere, we had, like, there was a big change in our band in that we were tired of touring mm-hmm. so much, and we wanted to focus more on writing and recording. So for the next album that we made, which was called Just Say Yes, our contract had run out with Fuel by Ramen, and we thought, you know what, let's just try and go back to being an independent band. So we we thought, all right, well, we'll sign a distribution deal with this company in North Carolina called Red Eye.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of became our own label, which is called Modern Short Stories. And we had them distribute it. And that was a really cool learning experience as far as like the music business goes, like yeah. being your own label and getting your album in stores. And that album, I love that. To me, like that's the first album that where I really feel like I had arrived as a songwriter. I mean, we all write songs. I'm just speaking like for myself personally. But I'm a really big fan of that record. And we did that record with two different producers. We did half of it with that Sean O'Keefe guy who did Action and the song we just released. And then the other half with this guy, Jamie Wolford, who was in another Fuel by Ramen band called The Stereo.
Yeah.
Great, great band. Working with him was so wonderful that we did our following record with him, too.
Yeah.
And that record was called Delightfully Pleased, which came out in 2010.
Uh-huh.
So that album, our first guitar player came back to the band, and we got a new drummer. Our drummer, PJ, who had found, like, was the original drummer, he left the band to, he wanted to basically not be a professional musician anymore. He wanted to get a job. Basically, mm-hmm. he wanted to make some money.
Right. That's fair.
Which we were all like in our late 20s, so that totally makes sense. But we put out Delightfully Pleased again on our own label, and I really like that album. That album was like more, Just Say Yes was more like leaning, like kind of out of pop punk and into just, I don't know, there's like a whole bunch of different types of songs on Just Say Yes. Like there's a fast punk song, there's like a kind of like Ben Folds-y upbeat piano song, there's like a slow piano ballad, there's one song that's like just kind of crazy sounding, I don't even know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Delightfully Pleased, we were like, let's make an album that, you know, let's try to make an album that our fans want that would be more like punk rock. And we did that, and I love that album. I don't think that after that we were like, all right, let's not do what we think our fans want, and let's just do like what sure. we want.
Yeah.
And we've been doing that since.
Yeah.
So then,
just to pause you real quick, I'm interested a little bit in, you did some interesting thing, like you announced the fact that you were releasing Just Say Yes on an AIM chat room, which is just funny. And putting out some stuff, like putting out some songs for download through Absolute Punk and doing some free downloads, and you can get more music if you pay X amount. So you've done some interesting internet stuff leading up to what you're doing now with the Kickstarter thing. How do you feel like the internet has affected not just you guys with the music industry, but the music industry as a whole? And how do you feel like you guys have kind of tapped into that? And what would you say to a band that's like, I know that the internet's there, but I don't really know how to tap into it. Like, how do you know where to go with the internet, where it's at now?
Well, you know, bands are always asking me, like, do you think we should use Snapchat or do you think we should use Instagram? And like, I don't think it matters at all. It's about like what you do with it.
Yeah.
I always suggest to like pick one thing and do that really well rather than trying to like maintain 25 different, you know, social media platforms. We also always think about like how like Nirvana would have never like talked about their Facebook on stage.
Right.
That's like something we always keep in the back of our heads about how like, you know, hey, if you're going to be a punk rock band, don't talk about your t-shirts or your Facebook on stage. Just go up there and like get your message out.
Yeah.
So as far as, you know, the whole technology, first off, I mean, if it hadn't been for the internet, no one would have, I don't think we would have ever done anything.
Sure.
You know, compared to what we have done.
Yeah.
But I will say this is that, you know, and the thing that helped us get signed to Fueled by Ramen was that we made a documentary about our band and we like, you know, pressed physical copies of a DVD. Huh. And this was at a time where like no smaller bands were doing that at all. And we did it, you know, we were like the only band that we would ever play with, you know, we were playing super small shows, but people would be like, how do you have a DVD? But like yeah. the technology was there for us to do it. But we were just one of the first people to like move on it. So I think that as long as like, you know, technology is always changing, and I think the bands right. that can stay up on what the new technology is and immerse themselves in it, I feel like are always going to have an edge up on people.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. And then just another thing I was thinking about as you were talking through how you guys have had some lineup changes and stuff like that. Talk a little bit about the difficulties of being in a band and why it's so difficult. Like it's so rare to see a band that has had the same lineup from beginning to end. So talk a little about, at least in your case, why you feel like it's been so difficult to have, band members stay for forever, and how they go in and out and stuff like that. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So when we first started our band, when we had like the first four original members, we had a manager and he used to tell us like, hey, you need to talk to your guys about the difficult stuff. Like what happens if so-and-so leaves the band? Like what happens if, you know, this song becomes a big song, like as far as like who wrote it versus like who actually wrote it, like how do you guys want to like, you know, split things up? He's like, you got to talk about, figure out like
the business side, you
know, the business side of it. And we were like, oh no, that's awkward. We don't want to do that.
Right. Right.
You know, we were young and naive and just kind of like looked at ourselves like we were like some exception. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. things were going well. And I think in avoiding that stuff, not that we like lost members because of any like disputes or anything, mm-hmm. but I feel like having those conversations with your band is very important in like maintaining a healthy band psyche.
Yeah.
So I think that was like the original difficult part of it. And then beyond that, you know, I think just keeping open lines of communications with your band, not about like what happens if something bad happens, but like, what are we going for? You know, I remember a time around like after we put out Just Say Yes, where me and Chris were super serious about the band and the other guys were serious about the band. They were there. They were, you know, out on tour for, you know, a month or two while we were doing that. But like after, by then we had learned to have those like long, difficult talks. And at the end of one of those difficult talks, it came to the surface that Chris and I were super interested and the other two, like it was more of a hobby for them. So yeah. That's communication, man. That's everything. Know where you're trying to go.
Yeah. And it's like you talked a little bit about touring and how important that's been to you guys, but also the fact that touring isn't for everybody. It sucks. And just how that's hard on bands. I feel like there's a lot of bands that don't end up making it because of the fact that some guys are super into touring and the other guys aren't willing to have those conversations about the fact that they hate it until it all ends. So it's just hard. But kudos to you guys for staying around for that long and being willing to have those conversations because it's super, super important, like you said. Moving forward a little bit, you put out Thrilled in 2015, and I love that album. I listened to that this week a few times, and really enjoy the sound of it. It's different. You kind of mentioned that you wanted to start. You never wanted to put out something that you feel like the fans would like. You guys just wanted to start making music that you wanted to put out, and so I feel like you kind of did that with this one. It's a little bit of a different sound. So talk about that album a little bit and what you guys were wanting to do and the evolution of your music and stuff like that.
For sure. So we put out Thrilled in 2015 on In Vogue Records. And Chris and I... Oh, okay. So can I take one step back?
You do it.
Okay. So after Delightfully Please, we put out an EP that we recorded with this producer, Mark McCluskey, mm-hmm. and we loved working with him. I love every producer we've ever worked with, but Mark really lit a fire under us as far as like honing in on our songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And so we loved working with him. We released that EP in 2012, and that EP, like our fans helped get that EP to... it broke the top 10 on the iTunes charts. It like went to number one. It was number one on the iTunes rock charts, which was just crazy to see like a fan, like a small succinct fan base.
Yeah.
Like champion your EP and really like spread the word with like, I mean, we spent nothing on marketing for that. Super sweet. We have the best apps. We don't have like a ton of fans, but we have, the fans that we do have are just amazing people.
Yeah.
So then for Thrilled, we thought that we would go back and work with that same producer. But I was living in Nashville, and we actually did Thrilled as a two piece with just me and Chris, and then we hired other players. and worked with the producer. So that one, because it was only two cooks in the kitchen, as opposed to the four that we're used to, we definitely like stepped out of bounds as far as our sound goes, which I think, you know, some songs it worked really well, and some songs I'm like, well, that's cool. I mean, I like it. I like everything we've ever done, but I like love, you know, only a small percentage of
sure.
it, which I think that feels normal.
Yeah.
To me. So yeah, thrilled, man. There's some songs on there that I think are some of our best for sure. And then we went like after we did Thrilled, not that there was like any backlash from, you know, our fan base, but I think it just like caught them by surprise.
Yeah.
To me, you know, some of the songs on there are the most, like the song Thrilled, the title track, I think is like the most punchline sounding punchline song to me, as far as like the lyrical content and the message of it. That's definitely one of my favorite of our songs. But it's funny, like from doing that album with that producer, Mark McCluskey, he really inspired me to like, for me to want to make records and be a producer.
Yeah.
So that's like what I've been doing for the last few years.
Yeah.
And so for our new record, this is the first record that we're doing ourselves.
Oh, cool.
Which is really exciting. But it's funny like how much different it sounds from the last album that we did.
Yeah.
Which I'm always like amazed. Like, you know, I've brought up Bayside. Like Bayside amazes me in that they've like kind of like maintained their sound over the years. Like I think that they, you know, do a lot within that sound, but like I feel like our albums always sound so different
yeah.
from one to the next. But this album, we were excited to not only do it by ourselves, but like after Thrilled came out, and a lot of people said that they thought it was like two different soundings. So we're like, all right, let's go back to our like punk roots, take it, you know, back to like two guitars, bass and drums, and, you know, a couple other things. So the new record is very raw
yeah.
and very, you know, in like indie punk sounding,
yeah.
I would call it.
And you kind of mentioned the fact that you have a really loyal fan base. I feel like that's kind of a thing with punk rock music. Like, I feel like punk rock artists, for whatever reason, are able to stand the test of time because of how loyal the fan base is. Or you look at, you know, Five Iron, they're ska, but, you know, same type of thing where they were able to go away and then their Kickstarter blew up when they decided to come back.
So crazy. Yeah.
Just super loyal. And so what is it you think about that genre of music that the fans just stick around? They grow with the band, they evolve, and they're loyal.
I mean, the whole pop punk scene, it exploded. You know, that was a time, and me and you know the band Valencia?
Yeah.
Me and Brendan from Valencia are real good friends. And what's up, Brendan, if you're listening?
Hey.
He and I were talking one of the last times we were hanging out about how, because of what bands like Green Day and Blink 182 did, like with, you know, they exposed this type of music, and not that we just like rode the train, but we were there like when it exploded. And I feel like that's had a lot to do with like where we've gone in our lives. And that's really fascinating. So I think that the reason that people love that type of music is because we were all there when it went from being this underground thing and caught on.
Yeah. But it's interesting too. Like, as I listen, there's like, I'll listen to music that I was into 10 years ago and I'll be like, I just don't really enjoy it anymore. Like, my tastes have evolved, but there's something about punk rock that's still, like, I'll go back to and just, like, man, it just still works, like, on every level.
Yeah, it's super fascinating to see what has stood the test of time. Like, when I look back at what I listened to when I was, like, 15, half of it, I'm like, that's so cool, Little Steve. And the other half, I'm like, oh, what were you thinking?
Right. And also, one thing you've said a couple of times is kind of the message that you guys are trying to put out. What would you say, like, it's a super cheesy question, but I feel like there's something to it. Like, what would you say if you were to boil the message of Punchline down into a sentence or two, what would you say that message is? Or a paragraph or a long story. I don't know why I said a sentence or two.
I mean, I think that if we had our, like, a mission statement, it would be, let's make something cool, figure out the smartest way to get it out there to people, and but all in all, like, I don't know, we're just trying to help advance society to be more harmonious,
less sucky,
which that sounds ridiculous. I don't know, like, we used to have songs that were about like, I'm so self-deprecating when it comes to, like, our previous works, but just always trying to grow. I think that we want to make songs that people hear and they think, wow, like, this song shows me something about the way that I think.
Yeah.
And we're trying to change the way people think in a more, like, positive and inspiring way. Like, we have this new song that's called Darkest Dark. And the song is about being in a hard place, being, like, in a dark place, but knowing that, you know, the people around you, that even if they haven't been in, like, the same thing, that everybody goes through these periods where they're hurting, and that, you know, you have friends to lean on, or, you know, telling a friend, like, you can lean on me
when it's
hard for you.
When you're not strong, you know, I'll be your friend. Talking a little bit, you guys have been around for a while now. Is there anything that you've written a song about and tried to make a statement about that you're looking back and you're like, I don't even agree with what I was trying to say in that song, like going all the way back to 98?
I mean, going back to 98, it's pretty much every song would fall under that. But one, this is funny, I feel like one of our songs that's from, like, 2010. The song's called 21 Forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, about a girl who, like, did you wrong because she just wants to be out and, like, drinking. And I feel like here we are in the dawn of 2017 of being, like, PC and self-aware and woke.
Yeah.
And I feel like that song's real, like, slut-shaming. Because I listen to that now and I'm like, come on, man. Like, she just didn't like you. It's not because she's, like, an alcoholic or something.
Yeah, because there's no way someone wouldn't just like you. There must be something seriously wrong with them.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So talk a little bit, you talked a little bit about Darkest Dark, but Matty T from Reliant K, who's been on the show before.
He has. Nice.
Yeah, it was a real good time. They were in a little bit of a hurry because Hoops had a date that night and they forgot. Yeah. Classic. But it was great. But talk a little about that song, why you decided to have Teason on it, and is that going to be on the new album and all that good stuff?
Yeah, absolutely going to be on the new album. That was the first song that we demoed, where after the demo was circulated throughout the band, we were like, that put us into, like, making a record mode. Cause we're always sending ideas to each other, but it takes, like, one real strong song to be, like, to spawn the second and third and fourth and so on. So that one really set the tone. And then, so I was living in Nashville, where Reliant K lives, and Matt and I are friends, and he had been coming around the studio. He was working on some material of his own, and he was there while we were working on Darkest Dark, and he had, like, some, you know, like, a harmony idea, And then I was like, hey, why don't you sing, you know, let's come up with something for this, for the bridge of this song. And we worked out an idea and recorded it. And it was funny because, like, he had just gotten married.
Yeah.
And he married the girl that he married. She is a big time vocal producer. She just worked on the new Linkin Park record.
Oh, wow.
She's worked with Miley Cyrus, Britney Spears, One Direction, like big time vocal producer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny because he got married, but then because she works on bigger stuff, she would kick him out of the house. They only have one home studio.
Yeah.
So she kind of had claim to the home studio. So I saw that he didn't have anywhere to go, so I let him come to my studio.
He's just pacing the halls of studios, just trying to find somewhere to record. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
You can work for us if you want to.
Totally.
And then as we're recording this, I mean, it'll be over by the time we post this. But you did a little Kickstarter for a Netflix doc, and you got it fully funded. We'll say that. Why not? And
it's not fully funded yet. We're at 85% with 6 hours to go.
Right. I'm saying as of posting this, it will be fully funded. I'm confident.
So let me ask you this. What do you think about the whole crowdfunding? What are your thoughts on crowdfunding?
I think it's fascinating. Oh, wow. It just went up further. I just refreshed it. You got over 17,000 now.
Really?
Yeah. It just happened.
Nice.
It's fascinating because I think a lot of bands, like a lot of newer bands, will try to do it and it won't work. And then they'll be like, oh, it didn't work for us, so we're calling it quits. But for band, like when we look at like Five Iron, for example, like insane. Like it was amazing. They made, like, they were trying to raise X amount and they like quadrupled it or something like that. And I think for music, it's great. It's kind of made, fans like record labels, which I think is wonderful. And it's kind of put record labels on ice, but at the same time, like you got stuff like Spotify, which is in a sense, it's wonderful for music consumers. But for the artist, it can kind of suck. And a lot of that, I think, is because fans are wanting music, like, on demand. And I don't know how much of that is attributed to crowdfunding, but I think it's part of it. Like, we almost own part of what you're doing, and so we want it whenever we can have it, if that makes sense.
That does make sense.
But I think it's great. I love, like, is this the first time you guys have crowdfunded?
It is. We have always been on the fence about it because, I don't know, like, we never wanted to do it for a record because, like, we can make the records without having to crowdfund them.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, anytime I would see a band that was doing a crowdfunding campaign to do a record with some, like, astronomical goal,
yeah,
I would always feel like, well, that's way more than the record would cost you to make anyways. So for us, it's not that we were against it. We were just kind of against it for our own selves for making a record. But for this, we always wanted to make a music special, mm-hmm, where it's us playing live, but then also has elements of like a documentary and maybe some like funny stuff and kind of feel like a hybrid of a live concert, but also like a stand-up comedy show. Not so much about the comedy part, but like the live interactions with the crowd.
Yeah.
So we've always wanted to make that, but that is something that, like, hiring, you know, that kind of like video crew, that is not something that we could afford to do ourselves. So it really lent itself to doing this through a crowdfunding campaign. Which, man, I got to tell you, like 3 or 4 days ago, it was like stuck at 40-some%, and it just did not look like it was going to happen. We freaked out, thought about like throwing in the towel, and then in these last 2 days, it's gone up, and now it's at 85%.
Yeah.
And I just am watching, you know, people post stuff on Facebook along with their stories of, like, you know, how they came to know us. And it's just really moving and really cool to see people step up and help us out and hear everybody's stories.
Yeah. It's cool too. I feel like we live in a world where, it's even more than just music now. Like, people want that visual to go alongside of it. And, even just from, like, I think about, like, NPR's Tiny Desks and watching those. Like, I really enjoy those, seeing bands play music live in a different way. And so the fact that you guys are doing this and asking people to take a leap of faith with you to make something is cool. It's really cool. It's kind of just kind of what you guys do, it seems like, just kind of trying to try new things and stuff like that, which is really cool.
For sure. I mean, like, the way, you know, we made that DVD,
yeah,
and that exposed us to a whole new crowd. So now, you know, if there was a chance that we could make this and get Netflix to actually pick it up and be exposed that way, like, I feel like that's something that bands aren't doing. So we're just, you know, trying to look for a new way to get our music out there.
Until then, I'd love to end the pod by playing your newest song, Darkest Dark. So if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
Great. So if you could do, like, we're not actually on the radio, but if you want to do that whole, we're going to kick it to this new song by us, that'd be really fun.
You mean, like, introduce it?
Yeah. You know the way.
Yeah. So this song is called Darkest Dark. I believe the tempo is 190 BPMs. I believe that it is in the key of D major. And this song features Matt Thiessen from Reliant K. And to me, when the last chorus comes in, if there was ever a part in one of our songs that I wanted to represent our band, I think the last chorus of this song represents our band, of how we want to make you feel. Yeah. And it's called Darkest Dark. Did I say that?
Yep. Love it. Love it. Thank you, dude. I appreciate it. Thanks so much for coming on. When it gets hard, maybe I know where you are. Even in the darkest dark. When it gets hard, it's hard when I